The UN Paris climate change talks are just 2 weeks away, and now a landmark deal has been reached to restrict the development of new coal-fired power plants around the world. 34 OECD countries have agreed to end export subsidies for inefficient and dirty coal-generating technologies. Resources and Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg joins us from London this morning, where the Cameron government has just announced all coal-fired power stations in the UK will be closed within a decade. Josh Frydenberg, thanks very much for joining us.
Nice to be with you, Fran.
This OECD agreement means the developed world will severely limit the financing the coal industry abroad. Does this signal the beginning of the end for coal?
No, it doesn't. I think this is a good deal. Certainly Australia is pleased with the outcome because it strikes the right balance between reducing emissions while allowing the developing nations access to finance to build the power plants they need to lift people out of energy poverty. But coal is still a major part of the energy mix. 40% of the world's electricity comes from coal, and the International Energy Agency suggests that by 2040, that number will still be very high at just over 30%. So coal is not going away, but there is an emphasis on new high-efficiency, low-emission power plants, which we continue to support globally.
This is going to make an impact, though, because according to some, this deal will render more than 85% of the coal-fired plants on the drawing board now ineligible, removing 850 previously eligible plants out of the global pipeline. So this is going to have a huge impact on the industry, isn't it?
There's no doubt it will have an impact, because what it will do will focus financing on those most efficient power plants, and the ultra super critical high efficiency coal-fired power plants can reduce the carbon footprint by up to 40% on some of the older plants that are still currently in operation. They will continue to receive finance from governments for the construction of those power plants, whereas the subcritical power plants which are less efficient and do not reduce emissions by the same quantity will receive much less finance.
The International Energy Agency recently pointed out that to meet the 2 degrees Celsius goal, which is the a goal we're looking for agreement on in Paris, any new power stations must emit on average 200 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour. Even the most supercritical power stations, those most efficient you were talking about there, emit above 600 grams per kilowatt hour. So even the cleanest of coal plants will push us above 2 degrees.
Look, I think we all recognise, sitting around the table at the International Energy Agency meeting just today in Paris, that we do need to move ourselves to a low carbon economy. And that does mean a greater focus on renewable technologies and renewable energy, which Australia is at the forefront of developing. But at the same time, coal is still an important out of the energy mix, and it does take a long time to transition away from coal, and these new power plants do reduce the carbon footprint significantly. So given that there is over 1 billion people in the world, Fran, who don't have access to electricity, and that means that they have lower quality of life, health and education outcomes, there is a balance that needs to be struck between giving developing countries access to the necessary finance to build the power stations they need, at the same time focusing on reducing emissions.
This is the concession Australia won, really. You watered down the deal. You've secured an exemption for small coal plants in developing countries that don't meet those most stringent ultra super critical standards. How much was that about, you know, easing the transitioning these poorer countries, and how much of it was about protecting Australia's coal exports?
Well, as you know, Australia doesn't provide any of these export credits to any other countries. But we do have coal which is lower than sulphur and lower than ash, which can be used in these high-efficiency, low-emission power stations. Now, our focus was on our countries in the region, like India, like Indonesia, like the Philippines, who are building these power plants to try to deliver electricity to the millions that do not have it in their own countries. So we were able to reach an agreement with the Americans, with the Japanese, with the Koreans and other key players, as well as the Europeans, of course, to apply the finance to countries that had less than 90% electrification, meaning that less than 90% of their population had access to electricity. And I think that was an important concession, because otherwise you would have seen in countries like India and Indonesia, investments in much less efficient power plants, which would have increased the amount of emissions that that are delivered, rather than the high efficiency, low emission power plants, which we continue to support.
What about in our own country? You're joining us from London. The British Energy Agency Amber Rudd has just announced that Britain will stop burning coal for electricity within a decade. That's the country's dozen or so remaining coal-fired power plants must close by 2025. If it can be done in an economy like the UK, why can't it be done here?
Well, I am meeting with Amber Rudd later today or tomorrow, because it's here at the evening in London, and we'll have a further discussion about her announcement today. But you have to understand that different countries have different energy mixes. So in the United Kingdom, they get most of their energy from gas. 47% is from gas, 28% is from coal, and they also have a nuclear power program. 16% of their electricity comes from nuclear. Whereas in France, where I was just yesterday, 75% of their energy comes from nuclear, and in the United States, they also have a significant nuclear energy-derived system as well. Whereas in Australia, we rely heavily on coal. Now, we are scaling that
down. Some of them very dirty coal power plants still.
Well, they're not as efficient, surely, as we're seeing throughout Asia. I accept that. But we're moving, as you know, to a greater focus on renewables, and there's also a greater focus on gas over time. And I think that means that our carbon footprint will be reduced, but different countries have to do what they can within their own environment to get the right energy mix.
It's 18 to 8. Our guest is Josh Frydenberg, the Minister for Resources and Energy. The Kiribati President, Anota Tong, is in Australia pushing for a moratorium on any new coal mines or coal-fired power stations. And a few minutes ago on AM, he repeated that call. Let's have a listen.
We're running out of time, and I think we need to be focusing on some concrete course of action. And yes, I believe it is reasonable. I know I'm aware of the arguments that are being put forward. I think what is realistic is that it's not being suggested that the use of coal be immediately stopped. That would be unreasonable. But I think if we are serious about transitioning to renewable energy, then one of the very realistic steps is maybe to look at reviewing our decisions to open new coal mines.
It's the president of Kiribati, a desperate plea, really, but a fair point, isn't it? Why are we still building, opening new mines in this country?
Well, we're opening new mines where there's the necessary investment because there's global demand for it.
But we've just been talking about how that global demand is waning, is easing.
It is certainly waning to some extent, but it's still very significant. And that's the point, that by 2040, 30% of the world's electricity will still be generated by coal. And a country like India, which is one-fifth the size of the economy of China, and you've got a Prime Minister and Prime Minister Modi who wants to build 100 new cities, and up to 300 million Indians don't have access to electricity or sufficient access to electricity, they are meeting the demand by a combination of renewables as well as in coal. Now, in Australia, we're not building any new coal-fired power stations, quite the contrary. But we don't have the flexibility, for example, that the UK has with a nuclear energy domestic program, because while the UK is closing down their coal-fired power stations, they're actually scaling up their nuclear power from 16% today to 30%
sure. Okay.
Within a decade's time.
Can I just ask you finally and briefly on another issue? As Minister for Northern Australia, this 99-year lease of the Port of Darwin to a Chinese company with links to the Chinese military, it's clearly upset the United States. The US President chided Malcolm Turnbull at APEC that he should have been given the heads up. America should have been given the heads up. Other US officials quoted as saying they've been blindsided. Can you understand why the Americans feel aggrieved?
Look, we can only go on the best advice of our own defence agencies, and they've said both publicly and privately, as you know, that they're comfortable with this sale. There was a public tender process. There were lots of applications that were put forward, and the company that put forward the best possible bid, Landbridge, was successful. Now, the Northern Territory government still has a 20% stake in that port. It's a lease, it's not a sale. There will be further investment in it by these new owners. And I think what you're going to see is a good outcome for the Northern Territory government. And I'm sure that our defence agencies will be closely working with their American counterparts to ensure that any of the concerns that they have are dealt with appropriately, and that any concerns that they may have are taken into account in terms of the right operations that we have in Northern Australia.
Josh Frydenberg, thank you very much for joining us.
Nice to be with you.
Josh Frydenberg is the Minister for Resources and Energy. He's in London, but he's been in Paris all this week.